dear devotees. Yesterday we were talking about proving the existence of God, and we learned that there are three main types of proof that we can use to prove the existence of something. Pratyaksh Pramana means when you get a direct experience through your own senses. You see or perceive that thing, so you know it exists. But Pratyaksh Pramana is not always available in every case. So in a case where Pratyaksh Pramana is not available, we may also turn to Anuman Pramana, the second type of evidence. That means we deduce the existence of something logically, even though we haven't directly experienced it yet. And where both of these are unavailable, our scriptures say, Pratyakchenanumitya va yastu payo na buddhyate yattam vidanti vedena tasmad vedasya vedata. Then you turn to the third type of pramana, shabda pramana, which means the Vedas. Shabda pramana, you can say written word, someone else's word. Veda, as you have already heard in this series, is an eternal power which is produced by God in this world and is equal to God. Vedo Narayana Sakchat. Ved and God are one and the same. So Ved is said to be Bhagawan's Vani. Even though Bhagawan didn't create Ved, but Ved is preserved inside Bhagawan and produced by Bhagawan whenever it's required during Srishti. So based on Shabda Pramana, we can develop faith in the existence of God and proceed on the path of God realization and get the Pratyaksh Pramana for ourselves when we meet God, when we see Him, Sakchat Bhagawan, when we become God realized. But in order to get to that point, we have to follow the path. We'll be talking more about the paths to God later in this series. For now, in preparation for following the path to God, we need a little more knowledge. Knowledge always comes before practicing. And in this case, we need to remove some more doubts about God. The goal is to become surrendered to God. When you become surrendered, you get His grace. When you get His grace, you get God realized. But to become surrendered, you have to have faith in God. So the first step, obviously, is believing in the existence of God. We removed this doubt yesterday. There's another doubt that people bring up, that if God exists and God is omnipresent, why can't I experience Him? After all, Ved says, Tat srishtva tadevanupravishat. Once God created this world, once He manifested the universe, He entered into it. Eko deva sarvabhuteshu gudha. Sarvavyapi sarvabhutantaratma. Shvetashvatropanishad says, not only is He sarvavyapi, which means He permeates every particle of the whole universe, but He even resides within us. Atma krite parinamat, Brahma Sutra. Tadatmanam swayam akuruta, Taittiriya Upanishad. It means, going even one step further, one other Vedic mantra I told you says, God manifested the universe and then entered into it. Here it's saying, He Himself took the form of the universe. Atma krite parinamat. He himself became the universe. So how can he not be permeating every particle of this universe? And he's within us. Maya tatmidam sarvam jagadavyaktamurtina. Gita. Krishna is in everything. Purukha eve dagvam sarvam yad bhutam yat chabhavyam. Shvetashvatropanishad. There's nothing separate from God. He is in everything to the point you can say He is everything. Ishavasyame dagvam sarvam yat kincha jagatyan jagat. Again, Bhagwan Himself is this universe. Ishopanishad. Sarvam khalvidam brahma chandogyopanishad. God Himself is everything. So when He permeates every particle of this universe, or He Himself has taken the form of the universe, and He Himself is even within us, why can we not experience Him? Siya Rama Maya Sab Jag Jani Karau Pranam Jori Jug Pani. The whole world is the form of Sitaram. Yet, Ananda Sindhu Madhya Tav Vasa Binu Jane Kat Marasi Piyasa. How is it that we're swimming in the ocean of bliss? God is Anand, and He is everywhere. So we are literally, not figuratively, literally swimming in the ocean of bliss. Breathing air, we're breathing bliss. When we drink water, we're drinking bliss. God is in the air, God is in the water. We're eating bliss when we eat food. God is in that too. Yet we never experience it. We experience the taste of the food, not the taste of divine bliss. We experience the fragrance or smell of the air. We don't experience divine bliss when we breathe. So why are we bereft of that experience if God actually is omnipresent? The answer has to do with something we've already talked about. Tribhir gunamayair bhavairebhi sarvamidam jagat mohitam nabhi janati mamebhya paramavyayam. Gita. Shri Krishna says, all the souls who are under Maya are under the effect of the three gunas of Maya. We haven't talked about this yet. The three qualities of Maya, gunas, are sattva, raj, tam. Like if you have three different threads making up a shawl. Aja, mekam, lohit, shukla, krishnam, vahvi, praja, srijamanam, sarupa, shvetashvatra upanishad. This Maya is made of three qualities. Sattva, Raj, Tam. Sattva is referred to as white, Raj as red, and Tam as black. And these three qualities interacting with each other produce this amazingly varied universe. And all the souls who are under the bondage of Maya are bound by these three qualities. So when we say that our mind is mayic, it's made of Maya, what it really means is it's made of sattva, raj, tam, the three material qualities. When we say our senses are made of Maya, it means our senses are made of sattva, raj, tam. So sattva, raj, tam permeates our senses and mind. Or you can say our senses and mind are made of sattva, raj, tam. Thus, we cannot perceive God because of the fault in our own senses. It's like if someone is eating the leaves of a neem tree and he's exclaiming, "Oh, these are so sweet. Here, try some. These are the sweetest leaves I've ever eaten." He gives it to his friend. His friend bites down and makes a face like that. "What are you talking about? This is the most bitter thing I've ever tasted. This is a neem leaf. What's wrong with you?" "No, no, it feels so sweet to me." Then his friend found out he's just been bitten by a snake. To a snake-bit person, the most bitter thing tastes sweet. To someone who has jaundice, piliarog, if he looks at a white wall, he sees it as yellow. Everything white looks yellow to him. It's not the fault of the object. The object is white. Why is he seeing it as yellow? There's something in his senses which is wrong. It's distorting the truth. The taste was distorted by something, that snake venom, that poison in his body. Similarly, when we see God, even though he's here in this world, what do we see? We don't see him, we see Sattva Raj Tam. The whole thing is distorted for us. So that's why we have trouble accepting the existence of God. Because we say, "Oh, he's everywhere and I can't see him. All I see is a wall, a ceiling, a floor, TV, a clock. Where's God? He's right there. You can't see him?" "No, sorry, my senses are made of Sattva Raj Tam." So just like the ant who spent the whole day crawling on the mountain of sugar, and when she got home at night and said to her friend, "That was the saltiest mountain I've ever been climbing on my whole life." And her friend said, "What are you talking about? That was a mountain of sugar. It was so sweet." So upon further examination, it was found that she had a lump of salt, a big lump of salt in her cheek the whole day. So no matter what she tasted, even the sweetest sugar tasted salty to her. Similarly, we've got this Sattva Raj Tam, this Maya. So that's like a poison or an infection in our senses, in our mind. So whatever we experience, it's that Sattva Raj Tam that comes out and we're experiencing that. So we're actually seeing the Sattva Raj Tam, we're not seeing God who is underlying all of this. That's the problem. So in fact, becoming God realized is not about going anywhere to find God. God is already here. It's simply about removing the Maya, removing the effect of Maya. Maya will never be destroyed, but the effect of Maya can be eliminated on an individual soul. Just like you, let's say there's a bunch of people in jail. So if one of the prisoners is released from jail, the jail is not destroyed. The chains that bound that prisoner are still there. He's just released from them. The other prisoners are still bound. Similarly, when a soul is released from the bondage of Maya, the jail is still there, Maya is still there, and all the other souls still remain under the bondage of Maya, but this soul is released. So we don't have to go anywhere. We just have to get released from this effect of Maya. Remove that bimari of Sattva Raj Tam, that mayik bimari from our senses and mind, then we can perceive God right here, right now. But the only way to remove Maya, Maya metam tarantite, ma meva ye prapadyante Maya metam tarantite, Shri Krishna says very strongly in the Gita that the only way to overcome Maya is with my grace. You surrender, I remove the effect of Maya. I take you across Maya. So, we come back to surrender again. We understand that God is omnipresent. He's even in our own heart. but we can't experience him due to the effect of maya. And the only way to overcome this effect of maya is by surrendering to God and receiving his grace. Only with his grace can maya be eliminated, or the effect of maya eliminated for us. So in order to become surrendered, we still have to understand more. Remove some more doubts regarding God. Another big doubt: if God is Sat Chit Anand, he is the abode of and the form of absolute truth, absolute knowledge, and absolute bliss, then how is it that God produced this dukhmaya sansar? Bhagwan to sukhmaya hai, aur unse nikla hua ye sansar dukhmaya hai. Ye kaise hua? How is it possible for God, who is the very form of bliss, to produce something which is seems to be a form of suffering? If you look at this world, everybody suffers. Some less, some to extremes. So how is that possible? Or you could ask it another way: how could a kind and gracious God produce a world in which there's so much suffering? We'll clear up this doubt today. Regarding the origin of this world, you can understand that there are three possibilities about where the world came from. Either it didn't have to come from anywhere because it's always existed, number one. Number two, it created itself. Number three, God created it. Three possibilities. And tonight I'll prove to you that all three of them are wrong. What is the correct answer? You'll see. So number one, has this world simply always existed? And always means eternally. It's always been here from eternity until now, and it will always continue to exist. This is illogical. Because if you build something out of an impermanent thing, how can the thing you build be permanent? Meaning, the tattva that this sansar is made of is nashwar. So how could the sansar itself not be nashwar? How could it be permanent? What I mean is, our scriptures describe that where does this world, what is the energy of the world actually? It's called mool prakriti maya. Prakriti means the material energy, matter itself, the original energy that we see around us. It's called maya, or mool prakriti maya, the original cosmic energy. So this maya, it goes through phases. You have mool prakriti maya, you have mahan, ahankar, panchtan matra, panchikarn, panchmahabhut, akash, vayu, tej, jal, prithvi, stages of unfoldment of this world. But the five prime elements are akash, vayu, tej, jal, prithvi. Akash is the space itself. Vayu means air, movement. Tej means the fire, the light energy, you can say. Jal is water. And prithvi, physical matter. These five elements comprise everything. Whatever exists in this universe is made of akash, vayu, tej, jal, and prithvi. And these five things themselves are nashwar. So if you build a house out of wood, wood is nashwar, right? So if the wood itself is nashwar, will the house live forever? Will it exist forever? Impossible. You would have to build it out of a permanent, eternally existing thing. So when the Panchamahabhut, these five prime elements themselves are Nashwar, how could this sansar, which is made of these five prime elements, not be Nashwar? And science knows this fact. The second law of thermodynamics says that energy always moves towards a state of randomness. Things tend towards chaos, meaning left alone, something tends to break down. It doesn't stay in an organized state. Left alone, it tends to degrade and decompose. This is the law of entropy, the second law of thermodynamics. Sarve chayanta nichaya patananta samuchraya. Our scriptures also say, everything in this world degrades, fades, and eventually finishes. The word sansar itself means sansaratiti sansara, meaning that which changes from one state into the next. In other words, nothing is stable. Everything keeps changing. So when this is the nature of the world, how could we think that the universe as a whole could have existed forever? Nothing in this universe is permanent, so how could the universe itself be permanent? It's illogical. So according to this logic, the universe must have had a beginning, and it will have an end, just like everything in the universe has a beginning and an end. So number one can't be true, that this universe simply always existed. No scientist even professes this as a fact. No one thinks that the universe has always existed. Although this theory is put forth in the Purva Mimansa, one of the six Darshan Shastras. Okay, how about number two theory? The universe created itself, meaning the energy, whatever you want to call the energy of this universe, in our scriptures we call it Maya, Mul Prakriti Maya. That energy, or this matter, created itself. Or produced itself in the form of this universe. Or you can say nature itself created the universe. No need for God, no involvement of God, just the universe itself created itself, or energy itself created the universe. No involvement of God. This is theory number two. Let's consider this. Something as simple and small as a clock or a watch. Those who there are some people who profess this theory, that you could call them materialists, who say that God is not needed for this universe to come into being. They give an example. They say the universe is functioning automatically without any outside help, just like a watch functions or a clock functions. See, it's working automatically. The hands are going around. It's keeping time. No one is doing anything. Yes, this is true, but if you back up in time, didn't someone have to make that watch initially? And when it breaks down, because it will, nothing lasts forever. When it breaks down, someone is going to have to fix it. So if something as small and insignificant as a watch requires a maker, some intelligent being to make it, how would you think that this incredibly complex and vast universe could come into being without the help of some supreme intelligent being? In other words, God. One time, a teacher was teaching his class and telling them that this whole world came into being on its own. There's no supreme divine power involved in the creation of the universe. So he was explaining that to them, and then as part of the exercise, he had them draw a map of the world and color it in and hand it in. That was part of their homework. So one boy just took some colored pencils and just scribbled something randomly on his page, and he handed that in with the pile of all the other students. So when the teacher saw that, he was a little bit upset that this student think this class is a joke. So he called the boy, said, "What is this you've done?" The boy said, "Teacher, actually it wasn't me. Some pencils just came flying in through the window, and this paper just found its, they both found themselves in the same place, and the pencils just scribbled like that on the paper. I had nothing to do with it." The teacher said, "That's preposterous. It's impossible. It can never happen." The boy said, "If a simple map of the world cannot make itself, how do you think it's possible for the actual universe to make itself? You don't believe a map of the world can make itself, but you believe the universe can make itself?" There has to be some supreme divine power behind the creation of this universe. Some other philosophers, they give some theories, some reasoning like this, that you know how milk is produced inside a cow automatically? No one is, controlling that process. The milk is produced inside the cow. The cow eats grass, the milk is produced. It's automatic. Anyatra bhavan natrinadivat. Brahma Sutra refers to this theory. But you could ask this person putting forth that theory that if you feed grass to a bull, will you get milk? If you feed grass to a cow that hasn't given birth yet, will you get milk? And even at a more basic level, the cow is a sentient being. That milk is not producing itself. There is a sentient being involved. There's life force involved. Milk doesn't produce itself automatically. So in the same way, this world could not have produced itself automatically. Okay, someone else says, could Kaal have produced the universe? Time. No, because Aksharat Sanjayate Kaalah. Kaal is also a power, a material power, which goes dormant during the dormant phase of the universe, pralay. And it's awakened, or you can say started up, by God. Aksharat means God, from God, sanjayate kala. Kaal itself is set in motion by God. So time is not just an abstract idea, it's an actual force in this universe. And it's activated when God activates the mayic energy. Okay, someone else says, could any soul have created the universe? A soul creating the universe? We can't even understand how the universe operates. How could we postulate that one of us could have created this universe? We are agyani and asamarth. We spend our whole life trying to save up enough money to build a small house. And some people fail to do that. And you think we have the power to just create this universe? How? By thinking? If we had that kind of power, we could just think and become king. Think and become the richest person in America, in the world. So, no soul could have created this universe. Okay, could a Mahapurush, a God-realized soul, create the universe? Brahma Sutra says no. Jagad Vyapar Varjam. although bhogamatra samyalingatcha, a soul after God realization receives the same level of enjoyment of bliss that God has. Whatever bliss God enjoys, the soul enjoys the same. However, the soul is never given the duty or the job of creating, maintaining, or destroying the universe. That God looks after. Jagad vyapar varjam. The soul is never given that job. So, no soul under the bondage of Maya and no soul beyond the bondage of Maya creates the universe. In bald philosophy, there's another theory. They say, you see, when a seed sprouts, that ankur that comes out, the sprout that comes out, destroys the seed. Once the sprout comes out, the seed has been destroyed. So you see, from abhav came bhav. The thing was born out of what? Out of destruction. Or out of nothing. So out of nothing comes everything. That's the Buddhist philosophy. But this doesn't make sense when it comes to the creation of the universe, because if simply by destroying a seed something was created, then you could also roast the seeds. Roast them until they're powdered. Did any sprout come out of it? No. So the cause of that sprout coming is not the destruction of the seed. The destruction of the seed is incidental. It's not the cause of the creation of that sprout. Is the father killed by the birth of the son? No. So this is not logical either. At this point, I can give you a little glimpse into the philosophy, the crumb of creation put forth by our scriptures. Taittiriya Upanishad says, Tasmadva e tasmadatmana akashah sambhutah akashadvayu vayoragni agnerapah adbhyah prithvi prithivya aushadhayah aushadhi bhyonam annat purushah sava esh purushon rasamayah. In other words, from the original energy we call Maya, when it's activated, then you have Mahan. That's when the time energy is activated and the three gunas of Maya become activated. Then Ahankar, the consciousness, the original energy that even our mind is made of. Ahankar. Then comes Panchatanmatra, the original subtle, extremely subtle instincts of those five prime elements, Panchatanmatra. Then Panchamahabhut. You can say the subtle form, still not manifested physically, the subtle form of those five prime elements. Then panchikarn, they combine into one, and God enters into them. Then those five prime elements manifest physically for the first time. Akasha. The space is manifested. So can you imagine, in our theory of Sanatan Dharma, of the creation of this universe, the manifestation of space itself is several steps down the way. There are many steps more subtle than that. First you have Prakriti, then you have Mahan, then you have Ahankar, then you have Panch Tanmatra, Panch Mahabhut, Panchikarn, then the space is manifested. And we still haven't reached the level of the subtle particles that scientists have discovered. After the space is manifested, then Vayu is manifested. Meaning, in the endless space, movement, pockets of movement, start to happen. That's vayu, movement or air. Then comes tej. In other words, the very first subparticles emerge into the space, which was already in motion. That's the very first subparticles that scientists know about. Then after that, they know how those subparticles annihilate to create particles and atoms and molecules, and then space dust and matter forms. So all of that is already told in our scriptures, but the Paramanu that's referred to in our Darshan Shastras, like Nyaya, Vaisheshik, Sankhya, Paramanu, it's not atoms. The atoms are at this Akash, Vayu, Tej, Prithvi, Jal, Prithvi. So at that Tej level, particles start to manifest, and Jal, Prithvi, that's where the actual physical matter manifests. That's what scientists know about. When our scriptures refer to Paramanu, they're not talking about electrons or protons. They're talking at a much subtler level. The Paramanu of our scriptures refers to that level of Panchatanmatra, which is the fourth step in this 12-step process of the manifestation of the universe. So what I'm trying to give you the understanding of here is that scientists can never get a complete knowledge of this universe. They can have a knowledge of some of the universe, but to get total knowledge, perfect knowledge, even of this physical universe, to get that, you would have to know the one behind the creation of the universe. Scientists know there must be some other power behind it, and they try to discover it, but they can't reach that other power because that other power is divine. And you can't know the divine through material means. But yasmin gyate sarvamidam vigyatam bhavati. Ved says, if you know God, you know everything. So you want to perfect your knowledge of this universe? You have to know God. You have to reach God. Some people also question, this universe is jara. The energy of the universe is lifeless and mindless. How could it have come from God? God is Chetan. He's alive. He's Chit. So Ved gives an answer to that also. Yathorna nabhi srijate grihnate cha yatha prithivya moshadhaya sambhavanti yatha sata purushat keshalomani tathaksharat sambhavatiha vishvam mundakopanishad. Just like hair grows on the human body and on your head, so the hair is jard, right? You can cut it. You don't scream in pain. Your nails grow out of your body. You cut those. No pain comes from that. If you get too close, ooh, then you know it. So there's a live part to your nail and there's a dead part to your nail. So out of your live body, a dead thing is growing. A spider spins a silk web. The web is not alive. The spider is alive. So, yathorna nabhi srijate grihnate cha. Just like a spider spins a web and then swallows it, and then spins a web and swallows it, so God manifests the universe and brings it back into Him, manifests it and brings it back into Him. So the jada universe comes from Chetan God, just like hair grows out of our live body. Jada, Baal, comes out of our Chetan Sharir. So theory number two doesn't make sense, that this universe could have created itself. To think about it, our scriptures give one more example to help us understand. The creation of a clay pot requires certain things. First of all, you need material. You need clay. You need a kiln or a fire in which to fire the clay. You need a pottery wheel or something to shape the clay. So you need the saman, the material. You also need a person, the maker, the kumhar. So you need the person. That person has to have the knowledge, because even if you have all those materials and you put it in front of me and tell me to make a clay pot, there's no clay pot going to be made because I don't have the required knowledge. So you need the maker, then the maker has to have the required knowledge. So if he has the required knowledge and the material, but if he doesn't have the ichha, the desire to create a pot, still, no pot is going to be made. Now, if he has the desire and the knowledge and the material available, he still has to do cheshta. He has to put the effort, and then the kriya will happen. The pot will be created. So if you need all of these things for the creation of a simple clay pot, in other words, banane wala, gyan, saman, ichha, cheshta, and only then the kriya will happen, just for the creation of a clay pot, then it stands to reason that you would need all of these things for the creation of the universe as well. In other words, you would need someone who has the material to create the universe, who has the knowledge to create the universe and the power, the strength to make it happen, the desire to do so, and the ability to make it happen. Now, if someone says that nature has all of these things, then I would say to that person that your nature word you're using is just a synonym for God. If your nature has the ichha, cheshta, gyan, all of that to succeed in creating this universe, then nature is simply another name for God. God has uncountable names. So tomorrow, instead of saying Krishnaya Namaha, Ramaya Namaha, we can say Natureaya Namaha. It's no problem. So we see that there has to be some power behind creation. The energy itself, the maya itself, is jada. So it stands to reason, just like I explained, that this universe couldn't have just existed forever, because the nature of the energy of this universe is that it's always changing. So it couldn't have existed in this state forever. And in fact, our scriptures tell us that it cycles from Srishti to Pralaya and again to Srishti, meaning it's manifested in this physical form, then it's dissolved into a subtle form, but the energy's not destroyed, it's just dissolved, because energy cannot be created or destroyed. So it's dissolved, but it's there in its absolutely subtle, dormant form. Then it's awakened, enlivened, and it produces the form of the universe, and again it's dissolved. But that energy itself has no mind. So how does the energy know to enliven itself, to manifest the universe? And how does it know to dissolve itself, to destroy the universe? It doesn't. No scientist would profess that the universe has a mind and decides, okay, time to bang, and manifest, the energy expands and produces the universe. How did the energy know to do that? For how long was it sitting in that dormant state? Something had to be a catalyst. So it stands to reason that there's something that would be that catalyst would have to be greater than the universe, because it would have to be holding the universe, that energy, while it's being dormant. And it would have to have the power to activate that energy. So such a power could only be divine and unlimited and absolute, and that is only God. So God is said to be the nimitta karan of the universe. And Maya is the upadan karan of the universe. Karan means reason. Nimitta karan and upadan karan is like someone who bakes a cake. So the baker is the nimitta karan, and the flour, water, sugar, etc. is the upadan karan. What's the material that he's using to make the cake? That's the upadan karan, the material cause of the universe, or substantial cause of the universe. And the nimitta karan is the instrumental cause of the universe. Flour and water don't just bake themselves into a cake. You need someone to do it. So God is the nimitta karan, and Maya is the upadan karan of the universe. Although it is also said, since God has to enter into Maya for Maya to be able to take the shape of this universe, and God pervades every particle of Maya, so it is also said that God is not only the nimitta karan, he is also the upadan karan, because he himself took the form of this universe, and Maya is only existing on the base of God, like algae growing on the surface of a pond. Or like, let's say you have water and you add food coloring into it, and then you freeze it into a block of ice, and then you sculpt that block of ice into, I don't know, the shape of a human being. So you're looking at that ice sculpture. Let's say you added red food coloring to the water before you froze it and sculpted it. Now you're looking at that sculpture, and what do you see? Red. You see a red sculpture. Do you see the pure water within the sculpture? No. All you see is the red. Just like that. We see the red. It means we see the gunas of Maya that are actually just existing on God's, on the base of Bhagwan. Just like that food coloring is there, fine. But what it's in the pure water. It's the water that took the shape of the sculpture, right? Not the food coloring. The food coloring didn't take the shape of the sculpture. The water took the shape of the sculpture, but you can't see the water because of the food coloring. In the same way, God has taken the form of this universe, but just like the food coloring obscures your ability to see the water, Maya, existing on the base of God, obscures our ability to see God. But really, in fact, this whole universe is simply the form of God. But because our senses and mind are infected with sattva-rajtam, we can only see the sattva-rajtam in this world, and we cannot see God, who is in fact the form of this universe. However, tomorrow I'm going to prove to you that God did not create the universe either. Bolie Vrindavan Bihari Lal Ki Jai.